From 90.9 WBUR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.
This is being treated as a terrorist investigation.
Coming up, a special hour on Orlando and the worst mass shooting in American history.
We are spending a tremendous amount of time trying to understand every moment of this killer's path to that terrible night in Orlando.
He didn't just aim at anyone. He aimed at a specific LGBTQ community on Latin night.
Part of me is like, you have to continue on. This is, you know, the hate would win if you let it change you. But then there's a part of you that's scared as hell to be in an environment that you feel unsafe.
I spend a lot of time thinking that things are getting better and that things are improving, and then we all discover that there are some people who just hate because of who we are.
Local reaction to Orlando and your calls next on Radio Boston. First, the news.
Thanks for listening to the Radio Boston podcast. If you'd like to support WBUR, go to radioboston.org and click the pledge button in the upper right-hand corner. Okay, back to the show.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're going to spend the hour today talking about Orlando, the worst mass shooting in American history. At least 49 people were killed when a gunman burst into Pulse, a popular gay nightclub, at closing time early Sunday morning. The killer reportedly professed his allegiance to ISIS. Here's President Obama earlier today.
This is being treated as a terrorist investigation. It appears that the shooter was inspired by various extremist information that was disseminated over the internet.
Well, what happened in Orlando is having a ripple effect all across America. This morning, Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker spoke at the State House. He said he spoke to his brother, who's gay, and other friends who are gay, and asked them how they're feeling.
The answer I got, which I think is pretty consistent with the response you get from anybody in the LGBT community at the moment, was I spend a lot of time thinking that things are getting better and that things are improving, and then we all discover that there are some people who just hate because of who we are. And there's no room for that here in the Commonwealth or anywhere in society. We should, of course, do all we can to resist that.
Governor Charlie Baker a little earlier today. We're going to explore as many of the implications as we can of this weekend's absolutely awful events, and we want to know what you're thinking and feeling. So call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. We're going to start with some of the victims. Two of them were from Springfield, 23-year-old Stanley Manolo Almodovar and 37-year-old KJ Morris. Almodovar's aunt remembers him as, quote, an amazing person with a good soul. Morris's close friend says she was, quote, a gentle giant, really funny and quirky, just genuinely kind. Well, Nick Bazzo knew two other victims. His friends, Christopher Lenin and Juan Ramon Guerrero, were partners. Bazzo is director of True Colors at the Theater Offensive in Boston. He's also lived in Orlando for years. And when we spoke with Nick this afternoon, he shared his cherished final memory of Christopher and Juan together. He had seen them just last week.
It was them dancing the night away by a swimming pool to just fun music, and that's my last memory of them, and that's what I'll hold, you know, with me as I think of them, and I'm glad that they are together.
Hmm. Well, as you said a little earlier, you're from the Orlando area, lived there for quite a while. Can you tell us what the Pulse means, what those clubs mean for the LGBT community there?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up, I moved to Orlando when I was 17, so at 18 you could go out. So the clubs there were the opportunity to express yourself. I met my partner, Steven, at a different nightclub nearby, and, you know, we've been together now 12 and a half years and married for three. So, you know, the club scene there personally has a the sweet spot in my heart. You know, every time we go back home, we frequent Pulse or the Parliament House or Southern Nights, which are all, you know, institutions in the town. And Pulse actually is one of the newer nightclubs for the LGBT community. And a good friend of mine said it best, you know, this was the club that our generation got to claim a little bit because the other ones had a longer history and reputation, and this one catered to a much younger crowd than the other clubs, so we could claim it as our own a little bit more. It was a very small club, so when they said there were 350 people in there, that meant people were shoulder to shoulder with each other. It was not a very big nightclub. It was more the size of a bar that had a random dance floor in the middle of it.
And I just wonder how it makes you feel that a place like this, which, you know, as you said, is a gathering place, a celebratory place for young people in the community, is the one that got attacked. I mean, do your friends feel unsafe now?
Well, I you know, last year when marriage equality was enacted all over the country, I think for myself in particular, I felt a sense of personal safety that I hadn't before. And I feel like yesterday ripped that away from us. I think we will find it again and we will find strength in this. But right now, it's definitely a wound that is bleeding at the moment. It's hard to imagine, especially as Pride Month is continuing around the country, what those celebrations look like. And, you know, part of me is like, you have to continue on. This is, you know, the hate would win if you let it change you. But then there's a part of you that's scared as hell to, be in an environment that you feel unsafe.
Well, Nick Bazo is the Associate Director of Programs and Director of True Colors at the Theater Offensive in Boston. Nick, thank you.
Thank you.
We are talking about what happened in Orlando and its implications here locally for all people in Massachusetts, and regardless of what community you're from, but particularly for the LGBTQ community in Massachusetts. We want to hear from you. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're joined now by Maura Healey. She's the Massachusetts Attorney General and the first openly gay Attorney General in the United States. AG Healey, welcome back to the show.
Well, good to be with you, Meghna. I'm sorry it's under these circumstances.
As am I. I am very sorry. But again, it's great to have you. Joining us also in the studio is Arlene Isaacson. She's president of Isaacson Political Consultants and volunteer co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. Arlene, good to have you back as well.
Thank you.
AG Healey, let me just first of all start with you. What are you feeling today? What's your reaction to what happened this weekend?
Well, I'm just so heartbroken and sad. This is so terribly horrific. My heart goes out to the survivors, the victims' families, and the members of the Orlando community, and to all in the LGBT community. This is such a devastating blow. I was so happy on Saturday, marching in Pride with my team, and you know, it's Pride Month. We had a wonderful week here in the city celebrating equality and inclusion and advances in LGBT rights, and then to wake up Sunday morning and to just see the news and to learn more throughout the day. I am sad, and I am horrified, and I'm also, you know, outraged too, because this is the deadliest mass shooting in U.S. history. It is also another mass shooting. And, you know, last year we had more mass shootings than we did calendar days in this country, if you can imagine. 300 people in this country die every day, or I should say 90 die every day from guns. Another 200 are injured every single day in this country. And here is an instance where we saw a shooting happen using a particular, it appears, kind of weapon that frankly should be banned. We need to reinstitute the federal assault weapons ban and at least move forward on that.
AG Healey, hang on here for a second because I want to get some reflection from Arlene, but I want to come back to the point you just made. But Arlene Isaacson, I do just want to get your feeling about how you reacted to what happened this weekend and how you're feeling today.
It was, I suppose, self-evident that it's heartbreaking, the devastating, actually. Of course, our hearts go out, and I mourn for the victims and their families. But candidly, despite all the battles for equality in the LGBT community that I've experienced over the years, I thought I might have been hardened to bad news, but I was in tears much of yesterday. Mm-hmm. And my goal is to get through this interview without crying.
Yeah. Are either of you feeling renewed concern for members of the community here in Massachusetts?
Well, how can you not? I mean, how can you not across this country when you see this kind of hate, this kind of terror, this targeting? And look, you know, well, I think that there have been significant gains made in the area of LGBT rights and equality, thanks to great people like Arlene and others. We still got a ways to go. We still don't have signed yet a transgender equality bill. You know some of the divisive rhetoric that we've even sort of heard here over the last several months in our own state. The work continues, and the fight for civil rights continues. I think what I want to tell people and to convey is that all in law enforcement, the local, state, and federal level, are in communication here in Massachusetts, and every step will be taken to ensure public safety. And I just hope that all of us in the community and those who support the community stand in solidarity and unity for peace and love and,
right.
and understanding.
Arlene Isaacson, we heard Nick Bazo a little earlier tell us that, you know, he as a younger member of the LGBTQ community, he had been feeling safer and freer following so the Supreme Court decision legalizing gay marriage across the United States, but that he felt that what happened on the weekend has ripped that sense of safety away from him. And I'm wondering if you feel that that the attack in Orlando has particular resonance amongst everyone in the community, but younger members of the community who haven't maybe seen, I don't want to say as much violence, but perhaps not as frequent violent attacks in the past decade or so as maybe were in the past.
You know, it's an interesting point, Meghna. Those of us who are old enough to remember the times when violence against LGBTs was relatively common and culturally accepted in many, many places, including many here in Massachusetts, it feels familiar in some fashion. And I think for younger folks who have younger GLBTs who have come along after we've won so many battles for equality, it probably feels even more shocking for them. But having said that, I think that for most LGBTs, most of us are probably experiencing a sense of there, but for the grace of God, go I. Hmm. A real, true, deep feeling of it could so easily have been me, if not me, today, me at some point in my life, when most gay folks, most LGBT folks would go to gay bars because it was a safe place to go. It's kind of funny, in the straight world that wouldn't be the case. Bars are hardly viewed as a safe haven. But for us culturally, for decades and decades, it's been a place to go where you can be yourself, be free, be safe, know that there'll be homophobes won't be there.
Right.
And so this shatters that on the one hand.
Attorney General Healy, I know I'm kind of going back and forth between issues and areas of concern here, but there are so many, right? I mean, Arlene was just talking about areas of safety for members of the community. And, you know, you talked about work that needs to yet be done on the political level. And then, of course, there's the question of guns as well. I mean, I read an absolutely heartbreaking Facebook post a little earlier today from the mother of a Sandy Hook victim, one of the first graders who was killed. And in the middle of her Facebook post, she wrote to the victims and the family members of the victims in Orlando, she said that she was feeling incredibly personally sorry that the loss of her child wasn't enough to get America to rethink its lack of a ban on assault weapons. And she felt like she had to apologize to the family members of victims and survivors in Orlando. And it just, I have to ask how much, I mean, there is so much work to be done, but how much work is possible to be done if Sandy Hook, Oregon, now Orlando, the list goes on and on, we still can't move all that aggressively forward on assault weapons in the United States.
Well, that's what's got to change. My heart goes out to that mother. No mother should have to feel that, express that. It's outrageous. And, you know, I went down to Washington, the White House, a few weeks ago, and what I'm trying to do is frame this as a public health discussion. Mm-hmm. I am sick and tired about fighting about the Second Amendment. It is there. It stands. It's a right. We must respect and do respect, but it's not a zero-sum game. And there is a role for public health. There is a role for public safety. The fact of the matter is we had a federal assault weapons ban in place. It was allowed to expire. Since then, we've seen an exponential increase in these mass shootings. We need to reinstate that. We cannot give up hope. I mean, what is the alternative here? Look, the LGBT community is strong. Americans are strong. We have overcome and accomplished great things. This just takes facing up to the reality of what it is that's happening.
Now, in May, you joined 13 other attorney generals in a letter to Congress that was asking for a repeal of a provision that denies funding for the CDC for gun research.
Right. This is such a simple, modest step. People probably don't realize that years ago, not only did Congress provide immunity to gun manufacturers, but they also prevented the CDC from studying gun violence and trauma. Why does that matter? Well, if you allow the CDC to study these things, they can probably come up with, as they do in other areas, better intervention and prevention and safety strategies. So my ask, joined by some of my colleagues, was to loosen that hold on the CDC, let them study this, fund this, and let's treat this as a public health issue. But in the meantime, I will continue to make the case that these weapons have no place in civil society. They are military weapons. They're for the military. They're for law enforcement. This does not interfere with one's right to own a gun for self-defense or to hunt. But we've got to get real. It's time to reinstate that ban. The mm-hmm. fact of the matter is, you know, any country, any society, we're going to have people who are a danger to themselves or to others because of mental illness or radicalized views, prejudice around race, religion, politics, you name it. But let's focus on the means through which these atrocities are accomplished and make it harder for that to happen.
Maura Healey is the Attorney General for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Arlene Isaacson, would you be so good as to stick with us for the rest of the hour?
Will do.
Okay. So I'll ask Arlene to stand by here. We are talking about what happened in Orlando, the worst mass shooting in U.S. history. 49 people killed at a popular gay nightclub in Orlando, many of them young people. What's your reaction? If you're a member of the LGBTQ community in Massachusetts, how are you feeling today? Are you concerned that something similar could happen here? What do you make of the fact that the shooter professed fealty or allegiance to ISIS before going in to Pulse in Orlando? What do you think is the way out from this cycle of hate, homegrown extremism, guns? There's a lot to discuss here, so call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. We'll be right back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. Welcome back. We are talking about what happened this weekend in Orlando, the worst mass shooting in U.S. history. At least 49 people were killed when a gunman went into Pulse, a very popular gay nightclub in Orlando, and shot again 49 people and dozens more who are still wounded, many of them critically in Florida hospitals. And we're getting your reaction. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. What do you make of the fact that President Obama says that he calls this domestic terrorism, and he calls the shooter a likely homegrown terrorist who was most likely radicalized by information available on the internet? What's your reaction to the fact that the shooter targeted a popular gay nightclub? And what do you think this means for America that we keep saying the worst mass shooting in America, and then it seems a couple days, weeks, maybe hours later, we're saying it all over again? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're joined in the studio today by Arlene Isaacson. She's volunteer co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. And Arlene, they've got some callers here who want to join us, so let me just get a couple of them in and see what they have to say. Beverly is calling from Watertown. You're on the air, Beverly.
Hello. It's good to be able to talk about this. I think what's really important, I would like to try and have this heard as a question, is I think every time something like this happens, whether it be an individual victim, like an Indian woman student in India, who is raped so badly that she dies as a result of the rape that was a few years ago, a young student at St. Paul's here in New England, who was sexually assaulted in some way by a male student. So people started talking there, for example, about, oh, well, is it the culture of elite schools like St. Paul's? No, because if that were the case, the woman in India would have been safe.
Mm.
If it were only about homophobia, and I'm saying this as a person, a woman, a black woman who came out as a lesbian in 1975 before Ellen DeGeneres and was one of the few out black lesbians in this country at that time, I just want to say that if it were, this were only about homophobia today, then could you explain why a little over a year ago a group of black people in Charleston were murdered?
Right. Right.
And there was the same kind of emphasis.
Beverly, I think I take your point, and I'm grateful that you called. Arlene, let me just turn Beverly's question back to you. I mean, she seems to be pointing the fact that she doesn't just think it's about a particular community, that there's something deeper at work here.
Well, I can't disagree with Beverly at all on this point, and I applaud her for being so brave as to have come out in the 70s, particularly as a black woman, as a black lesbian. But I do think that as we hear discussions about is this terrorism or is it hate, and I've had some attorneys, by the way, who say, Arlene, those have legal terms. There was a legal terms of art, so it's more accurate perhaps to say that it is an act of hate, an act of terror. To the extent that it's an act of hate, it's clearly inspired by anti-gay animus across the country that's gotten much better than it used to be. But quite frankly, we live in a country with 200 anti-LGBT bills that have been filed across the nation, and advocates for those bills, and hateful rhetoric on behalf of those bills. You can't have those kinds of things articulated again and again and again without them having some effect on the body politic and some effect on individuals.
Mm.
So while people may talk about ISIS-inspired terror, I think this is a quintessential example of anti-gay rhetoric-inspired terror and murder.
Huh. Well, let's go to John, who's calling from South Boston. You're on the air, John. John, are you with us?
Taking my call. Sorry about that. Yes, thanks for taking my call. I'm a homosexual myself. I think I have a fairly unique perspective because I've also been a sportsman and a hunter my whole life, and I feel sometimes as though it seems like we're the last caller kind of alluded to it, but we get it. We're not focusing on the right things. And here, Maura Healey talking, it's more about gun control and measures to prevent things from this happening. But I would echo the last caller's comment saying that I think there's just something deeper at play here. I mean, gay, straight, black, white, whatever you are, I mean, it's a horrifying thing to think about. He saw two gay men kissing in front of his child, and his reaction to it to teach his child to go kill 50 people in a nightclub. I just think that the gun issue allows nothing to get accomplished on the other front because it's so divisive. So I think we should just focus more on I don't know, trying to find out what's wrong with people today, or you know, how we can prevent that stuff in that way.
Yeah.
So, just basically my comment.
John, I appreciate your perspective, and thank you so much for calling. I want to bring another voice here into the conversation because we want to get a reaction from how what happened in Orlando is affecting all communities here in Massachusetts. Mahmoud Jafri is joining us. He's a trustee of the Masumin Charitable Trust, which is part of the Islamic Masumin Center of New England. Mahmoud Jafri, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Meghna. It's an honor and privilege to be on your show, and thank you for giving us the voice, which usually is muffled in these controversies, and only thing that we hear about is that it's the Muslims and it's Islam. So thank you for giving us the opportunity.
Well, given what you said, my first question still must be, what was your reaction to the fact that the shooter, once he was identified, is identified as a Muslim?
It is by far the biggest challenge that the Muslim families are facing today is this changing of the hearts and the minds of full-blooded Americans who are born and raised here. It's the biggest nightmare that every family with teenagers are facing in our community. And it's something to be concerned about. But I think the underlying reasons have to be identified, that it is not Islam which is creating this situation. There is a very demented, perverted sect of, it's not even a sect, it's a propaganda machine, it's a political movement, ISIS, which was created purely for political reasons, which is recruiting these people, and their sole aim is to terrorize the world. And some of the worst victims of this terrorism are the Muslims themselves in the Muslim countries. An example of that was 165 children were slaughtered, middle school and elementary school children in Peshawar, Pakistan.
Right.
These gunmen came in, and the shooting took place for half an hour to an hour. It was an orchestrated event, and I can go down the line.
Well, Mr. Jaffrey, if I might just jump in here, and forgive me for interrupting you, but you said something about this afflicting families, Muslim families in the United States as well, and I wanted to actually just play a quick piece of tape here. This is from the gunman's father, Siddiqui Mir Mateen. He spoke to the press this weekend and publicly apologized for the actions of his son, and he said that he had no idea what motivated his son.
I'm sorry again, and it is a very sad news today for all American, and I'm very, very mad. And I, as I said, if I did know of 1% that he is committing such a crime, my son, I would arrest myself, I would call the FBI, I would call the local law enforcement. I don't know why he did, what he did.
Mahmoud Jaffrey, my question for you is, we've had people on our show, members of the Muslim community, say that they are concerned that because of the things that you mentioned that ISIS is capable of the internet radicalization, the propaganda through its various media arms, etc., that it may be hard to know who's being reached or influenced by these materials. I mean, what kind of conversations are members of the Muslim community having about understanding the effects that it's having amongst young people better?
It is a conversation on top of everyone's mind, and unfortunately, these impressionable minds can go either way. But one of the things that we have to be very, very clear is that we have to start isolating these situations. You know, we live in a free society. We live in a society where we have a right to free speech. And at what point in time that free speech turns into hate speech, and at what point in time we should arrest someone because it is a motive that we are arresting them on, and it's not free speech anymore. And that's why this guy got away. He was on the list of FBI, and he was interviewed. But that's the price that a free society and soft targets create. And that's... this is the sadness, and this is where the sadness is, that we have created a free, pluralistic, accommodating society, and then you have these extremists who come in and do these things, and that also in the month of Ramadan.
Right.
No Muslim will ever even raise a stone in the month of Ramadan, let alone to create a heinous crime like this. And the irony is that this is also the time that we accept and celebrate and acknowledge the LGBTQ community.
Well, Mr. Jaffrey, if I may, I'm so sorry to have to keep cutting you off, but I want to get as many voices as I can in this hour. But I have one more question for you. And I am not the kind of person who paints a broad brush across an entire group of people simply by virtues of the actions or sayings of one individual, but I would like your insight on something. That, you know, we mentioned the shooter's father saying that he had no inkling that his son would do such a horrible thing to anyone, let alone members of the LGBT community. But just today, also, the shooter's father released a Facebook video in which he said, it's not for mankind to punish homosexuals, it's for God to punish homosexuals. So can you help me understand how we are to understand that he would say this just 2 days after his son had committed this atrocity?
Well, Unfortunately, this is a problem we have worldwide. This is not just limited and exclusive to Muslims also. I mean, I think if you talk to the Baptists in the South, you will hear a similar sentiment. If you talk about the old scripture, you will hear about the same issues. But unfortunately, interpretation of religion is the most dangerous thing that has happened to human beings. And some of the biggest and the most violent crimes have been committed in that name. So I don't think that Islam in particular can be singled out in saying that they are homophobic. I think it's more a cultural issue in certain societies, in the certain Islamic countries. The tolerance level and the acceptance is mm-hmm. very different than, for example, Saudi Arabia. So, I mean, I think it's a culture. I mean, I think you can see that in our country right here. I mean, the views yeah. of the Catholics, practicing Catholics, devout Catholics is one versus the Anglican Church or the views of the people in the South. So
well, there's a diversity of opinion within all faiths, and I take your point on that. And again, I apologize for having to cut you off, Mr. Jaffrey, but I do want to get to all the other people we have lined up for us this hour. So Mahmoud Jaffrey, trustee of the Masumin Charitable Trust, part of the Islamic Masumin Center of New England. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Arlene Isaacson, I just wanted to get a quick response from you.
Well, I think it's worth noting that a number of leading Islamic leaders in Florida and throughout the country have quickly came out and condemned the actions of the shooter. And as Mr. Jaffrey pointed out there, anti-gay animus, there's no one religion that shares that or has a corner on the market on it. And if we have to be careful to not condemn, he's right, to not condemn the Muslim community for this any more than we would condemn white Christians for the murder that took place in a black church a few years ago, or white evangelicals for the murder of Matthew Shepard, or any other anti-LGBT activities. There will always be radical haters in those groups. He's right about speech being a problem, but as the ACLU will always remind people, we live in a free society where free speech and even speech we hate has to be allowed. It's yeah. just the actions that we have to fight.
Well, we have brought up this idea of radicals and radicalization, so I want to bring in one more voice who knows quite a bit about the challenges there. She's Farah Pandit. She's the first ever special representative to Muslim communities under Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. She's a senior fellow at Harvard's Kennedy School and an adjunct senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. She's in London today, but she joins us now. Farah, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Magna, nice to hear from you.
Well, let's start with a little bit of tape from President Obama this morning in the Oval Office addressing exactly this issue of radicalization in the shooting in Orlando.
This is being treated as a terrorist investigation. It appears that the shooter was inspired by various extremist information that was disseminated over the internet. All those materials are currently being searched, exploited, so we will have a better sense of the pathway that the killer took in making a decision to launch this attack.
So the president there saying, yes, the internet and radicalization may have played a role here with the shooter. I mean, Farah, your thoughts?
So, you know, there's a lot to unpack here, and as I was listening to your other guests and the callers, you know, I was thinking a lot about the conversation about the different types of hatred that are out there that are stoking an environment that causes people to pull this us and them narrative into action, and whether you're talking about the LGBT community or you're talking about the increase of anti-Semitism, you are seeing a pivot towards targeting the other. And I think it's important as we go, you know, as our sympathies go out to the victims and those that are fighting for their lives at this very moment, you know, we have to have a very sobering conversation here in America about what is taking place. And as the president talks about radicalization, it's important for us to understand what we can do to prevent the lure of this type of ideology to be disseminated. And he talked a little bit about what's happening, what may have happened to this individual online, but it is both the off and online space that moves people in a particular direction ideologically.
Right.
That is something that we have to really talk very clearly about.
Well, so you currently serve on the Homeland Security Advisory Council, and you actually co-chaired a subcommittee that put out a report earlier this month about countering violent extremism. I mean, from, let's just look at the Department of Homeland Security's perspective, what can be done better at DHS to tackle exactly these things that you were saying? I mean, for example, the online part.
Yeah, and so this report was made public about a week ago, and it was a report that Secretary Johnson had asked a group of experts to look at and make recommendations to him as how we should be thinking about the spread of ideology and this particular type of ideology. And the report that came out says three things. First of all, I will say very clearly that Secretary Johnson has done a remarkable job in moving us in a direction to do more to allow credible organic voices to be part of the conversation, to build the kind of engagement between the government and communities in a very respectful and trusted way. And I think that really that is the core of how we do things. But there are three ways that we are really looking at this issue. One is, and this is very, very important, that the Department of Homeland Security gets the kind of support it needs to be able to do the job it has to do at the local level. And that kind of community engagement, very, very broadly, has not been supported enough. We have built an office there that is doing some of this work, but it has to be expanded. And as we see the growing different types of violent extremist ideologies, we must do more in that way. So one dimension of that report is all about how you scale that kind of effort up.
Yeah.
And really, Meghna, looking at the local, and that's the part that I really want to hit home on. You know, whether it's San Bernardino, whether it is what happened in Orlando, what happened in Boston, what happened in New York, unfortunately, these types of incidents, it's a national thing. There's not one part of our country that is more important than another. So it is a national architecture that we are advocating. So a 50-state solution,
yeah,
which includes mayors and governors, which I think is really important, Meghna. We have not given the kinds of tools to local actors to be able to do more, and that includes, by the way, the mental health experts.
Yeah. Well, Farah, I'm gonna have to jump in here because we're running out of time here. But I really appreciate your time today and the point about how the most effective battle may be on the local front as well. Farah Pandit, first ever special representative to Muslim communities under Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. She's in London today. Farah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll be back in a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. We will take more of your calls. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back. It's Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about what happened in Orlando and the worst mass shooting in U.S. history. And callers, you have been so patiently waiting on the line. Let's get to some of you. Nina is calling from Hyde Park. You're on the air, Nina.
Hi, Meghna. My wife and I took our 5-year-old to Pride on Saturday for the first time, and I really didn't think anything of it. I mean, I was here when the Boston Marathons happened, and I felt like we shouldn't bring him to the marathon, but Pride didn't feel that risky. And now I feel, yesterday very much felt like people might be judging me for somehow being an irresponsible parent and perhaps exposing him to something that's been so politicized, the LGBT community, and events like that.
And Nina, thank you so much for your call. Arlene Isaacson is here with us in the studio, and she was nodding her head.
Well, I had two reactions to what the caller just said. On the one hand, when my kids were young, I also took them to the Pride Parade, and I think it's a good and a positive experience for them to go through. As for what happened yesterday and how that affects how people feel about safety, I think our community has to go through the stages of grief that individuals have to go through, except it's a little different when you're doing it at the collective level. And I'm no expert in this. It's just my sense of how it plays itself out, that while we experience the grief and the mourning and the sadness, we also will quickly start feeling fear and anger And that we have to figure out ways to channel that into things that are positive and focus, for example, on our resilience. You know, we come from a community of people who have been, who have experienced horrific things for many decades, to say the least, if not longer. And we've managed, luckily, thankfully, to make our way to a greater place of equality these days. But this is a good reminder that we ain't there yet, and there's a long way to go. And we need to be defiant. And the question is, what will defiance look like? I think it's perfectly responsible to take our kids to pride parades, even in light of what happened yesterday. And it's perfectly fine for us to go to gay bars and GLBT venues. And in fact, we should. We need to, perhaps more now than ever before. But I understand that people will be fearful at first. We're lucky in this state. We have good leaders. I got a call from the governor's office last night to talk about this. The mayor has put more police in front of GLBT bars. We have a wonderful attorney general we've heard from. So we've got good leaders who are there to fight for us at the policy level while we fight for ourselves individually.
Let's take another call. Joy is calling from Worcester. You're on the air, Joy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to just comment that I came out in 1990 in New York City. Lived with my then partner in the city, so, you know, very liberal place. But in 1990, I was not comfortable, nor was she, of holding hands of any public display of affection. We appeared as roommates for the most part. I think a younger generation might think that's kind of silly, but it felt safe. But we felt most safe within the bars and the clubs within the city. I probably didn't hold a hand with a woman until the late 90s. Any place in public. So the bars and the clubs, even though I'm not a huge partier, I don't even drink anymore, it's always been a safe place. And I have gone to clubs around the country as I've just traveled on vacations, even with some straight friends, because even they felt safe. And I think someone said it earlier, sometimes the regular bar scene doesn't necessarily feel safe. It's kind of a crazy, there could be a danger involved. And it's always been safe. I personally will not from going out towards anything that's involved with anything LGBT, because I think as a community, we still need to stand together even more.
So. Joy, thank you so much for your call. And indeed, it was Arlene who said that the bars were some of the safer places in years past for members of the community.
It's one of the places, Magna, where we don't have to sanitize who and how who we are or how we act. We don't have to worry about being judged. You can be yourself.
You know, we've been trying to touch upon all the implications of what happened in Orlando. And Arlene, as you well know, we can't avoid the political implications because both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump spoke about Orlando and homegrown terrorism today in separate speeches. Clinton was in Cleveland, Ohio.
We have to stand together, be proud together. There is no better rebuke to the terrorists and all those who hate. Our open, diverse society is an asset in the struggle against terrorism, not a liability. It makes us stronger and more resistant to radicalization.
That's Hillary Clinton in Cleveland earlier today. Donald Trump spoke in Manchester, New Hampshire.
We need to respond to this attack on America as one united people, with force, purpose, and determination. But the current politically correct response cripples our ability to talk and to think and act clearly. We're not acting clearly. We're not talking clearly. We've got problems.
Well, WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks is at St. Anselm College in Manchester, where Donald Trump spoke. And Anthony, first of all, give us a little more of a sense of what Trump said and what his tone was like in this speech today.
Yeah, hi, Magna. Well, he was really eager to use the tragedy in Orlando to really double down on two themes that he has hit repeatedly since he launched his presidential campaign. First, that the immigration system is broken and that we need to impose a ban on Muslim immigration, or as he said, suspend immigration from areas of the world where terrorists are coming from. And second, that it's political correctness, as you heard in that clip you just played, that has prevented the U.S. from fixing the immigration system and essentially keeping the bad people out. And interestingly, you know, not surprisingly, he went after Hillary Clinton in a really direct way. And he did something interesting. He cast himself as the protector of women, of gays, of members of the LGBT community, because he says he's the one tough enough to protect them. and, you know, made a pretty direct implication that it was the weakness of President Obama that led to the tragedy in Orlando, Florida. Huh. So hitting these themes very hard and not afraid, essentially, to exploit what happened over the weekend in Orlando.
So, Anthony, how do you think this compares to other speeches that Trump has given on these themes?
Well, this was one of those rare speeches where he used a teleprompter. I think he went off script a few times. We're not sure because we don't get an advanced copy. It was before a very small audience of invited guests, mostly Republican state officials, both from New Hampshire and Massachusetts. Former Senator Scott Brown was here, for example. So a very quiet, respectful, appreciative audience. So I think in terms of this particular audience, this speech went down pretty well. Mm.
Well, that's WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks in Manchester, New Hampshire, talking to us about Donald Trump's speech about Orlando today. Anthony, thank you.
You're welcome, Agnes.
Well, let's turn to Cleveland, Ohio, where, as we mentioned a little earlier, Hillary Clinton gave a speech this afternoon. Sabrina Siddiqui is a political reporter for The Guardian U.S. She's been following the Clinton campaign, and she joins us now. Sabrina, welcome to the program. And you heard a little bit about what Anthony said, Donald Trump, the points Trump made. What did Clinton say this afternoon?
Thanks for having me. Well, Hillary Clinton said from the onset that this was not going to be a time for politics. But what she did was she proceeded to use the entirety of her speech to really challenge the notion that Donald Trump is prepared or even fit to be commander-in-chief. You heard her draw a lot of the same contrast that she did in a national security address she gave 2 weeks ago, where she really took down Donald Trump's approach to national security, condemned his Muslim ban, and also spoke out against how the rhetoric that he has used plays directly into the hands of terrorists. That was a theme again today. And I think this really was, in essence, her way of presenting the commander-in-chief test. You've had this attack on a homegrown attack on U.S. soil, and she really wanted to, I think, present herself as being tough, but also being measured in her response.
Mm. And she also addressed the LGBT community as well, saying, I've got your back.
Yes, she has place the LGBT community front and center throughout her campaign. She has given several speeches where she's discussed, in terms of domestic policy, a lot of the gains that still need to be made when it comes to discrimination and among employers. And I think she wanted to use this moment to make sure that it's not lost upon the public that this community continues to be targeted, that there is a lot more in terms of, you know, facing threats in their ability to live openly, as she said, to live freely. So I think that was a moment for her to just acknowledge the pain that the community is going through and not just cast this as any other attack or any other mass shooting. Mm. It certainly has that distinction of being a hate crime.
Well, Sabrina Siddiqui is a political reporter for The Guardian U.S., speaking to us from Cleveland, Ohio, where Hillary Clinton gave a speech a little earlier today about Orlando. Sabrina, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Arlene, let me turn back to you. You've got a long history in politics. I mean, this isn't, much as we want to separate politics from moments like these, they do come clashing together. And I'm just wondering what you thought about what Trump and Clinton said today.
Well, candidly, on the one hand, Trump's remarks that say simply being strong is the answer, does bring me back slightly to that quote, that line in Macbeth about a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing, that it's easy to say be strong, but if it was just being strong, then anybody could do it. It's a lot more important to be smart as well as it is to be strong. Clinton's remarks about the GLBT community were touching for our people. It's meaningful to have someone articulate, I'm with you, I've got your back, as opposed to the governor in Florida, who won't even say gay and lesbian when referring to Pulse. He talks about just the community. So those things are perhaps small, but they're very significant. As much as the politics is going to matter going forward, I'll take it back for one moment, if I may, just to the GLBT community, yeah, which is part of our challenge is to listen, is not only to be defiant and to be resilient, but also to listen to our better angels. And a friend sent me an email today, Pat Guerrero, in which he had a wonderful line that I'm going to be repeating, where he said that we have to find grace in the midst of death and darkness. And I think that's what the GLBT community needs to do. But candidly, it's what the larger community, Americans, need to do in addition.
Grace in the midst of darkness. Well, Arlene Isaacson is president of Isaacson Political Consultants and volunteer co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. Thank you so much for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
And callers, thank you so much for calling and giving us your perspective on what happened in Orlando, what it means to you. I didn't get to a lot of you, but go to radioboston.org, send us your comments there. These are issues that touch us all, and I encourage you to have your voice be heard. That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.